Hey, welcome to the Push Pull Sales and Marketing Podcast. I'm Marcello.
And I'm Sherry. And each episode will provide you with sales and marketing strategies that you can implement immediately into your own business.
All right, guys. Today, I'm speaking with Jeb Blunt. He's the best-selling author of 9 great sales books. He's a speaker, and he's also the founder of SalesGravy.com. So, Jeb, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, Jeb, we really appreciate having you on. And actually, yours is one of the first podcasts I listened to, I mean, forever ago. And that was back when I think I even had it on my actual iPod and I would download it versus now everyone just has an iPhone. It's really, really good stuff, especially like at that time too. There's so many like different podcasts and the sales ones were definitely lacking. So you definitely helped fill that niche. So for anyone who hasn't heard of you, Jeb, before, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, your background?
Yeah, thank you for listening to the podcast. I mean, we started podcasting in 2007 before podcasting was cool. And podcasted all the way through where podcasts got cool. And then YouTube came along and podcasts weren't cool anymore. And now it's back again because, you know, Bluetooth and like you said, we've got on our phones and we just passed 10 million downloads from the Sales Gravy podcast.
Wow.
After all those years, so a big, big milestone for us. Yeah, I'm an author. I'm also the CEO of a company called SalesGravy. We're a global sales training and development firm.
Okay.
Really fast growing. We've been doubling our sales every single year, and we are right on track to get to around $25 million in sales here in the next couple of years. And I've got a beautiful team of people around me. We run one of the most visited sales websites in the world called SalesGravy.com. And I spent a lot of my time traveling the globe. Last year, I did 307 nights on the road, either speaking or training, working with salespeople, with leaders in advisory positions with some of the companies we work with, even working with boards of directors on growth acceleration strategies.
That's awesome. So, all right. So that's kind of what you're doing now. And 307 nights, that's insane. Insane. So how'd you end up there? So, I mean, was this like always the vision? Like when you got into sales, like you knew that you just kind of wanted to run with your own thing? Or how'd you end up doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, you know, it was like, it's a story that you'll hear a lot when you speak to people that, you know, around my age is we hit 2006. You know, I'd come up, you know, through the corporate world, through, you know, just, you know, one really good economic trend after another, after another, after another. And I'd grown really fast. I was an executive in a Fortune 500 company at the vice president level, you know, 250,000 people in the company. And the recession hit us really, really hard. And I was in a situation where I had to make a decision, like a lot of people, that either I was going to have to go find another job because the job that I had wasn't going to be around anymore. Or I was going to have to go do something on my own. And, you know, it was frightening. It was a really difficult situation. I was like a lot of people, I had a house, mortgage, you know, family, everything that was going on at the time. And I was going on interviews and I was going to some, you know, pretty big job interviews. It wasn't like my life was going to fall apart because I lost my corporate job. It was just a scary situation. And sure. I realized in the process of doing that I just wasn't happy. Like I was sitting there like going through the process, but I didn't want to get back on the hamster wheel again. So I made a decision to start my own company and I had some money set aside. I'd been a pretty good saver my whole life. So I took my nest egg and I put it into building the company that is now SalesGravy.com. And I was always an entrepreneur at heart. And I wish, you know, if I go back and look, you know, regretfully, I wish I'd started maybe 5 years earlier than I did. But you know, those are hard things to go back and, you know, fix. You can't like, you know, 5 years earlier, I wasn't thinking I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was kind of thrown into it. There was no real plan. I knew that the one thing that I was good at was sales. I knew that I was good at teaching people how to sell because in my corporate job as a vice president of sales, that's what I did. It was the one thing that I got. And when I first built SalesGravy, I built SalesGravy as a job engine because, which was kind of crazy in the middle of a recession, but I kept looking at where the money was and the money in sales that I could get to quickly without having any books or reputation or anything that would cause someone to hire me was I could connect people who needed to be hired with companies that wanted to hire them. So I built SalesGravy.com, which became the largest sales job board on the internet over the next 4 to 5 years. We became the market share leader in that space in 2010. And then And then my envision from the very beginning was to use that cash flow from the job board to build the training and development company. And I needed some space to do that because there's a lot of risk in it. And you got to make some bets and you got to have some cash to hold you over while you're building out your client base.
Sure.
So I levered one against the other. And at one point, the only problem in that entire scheme was the job board got so successful and it was pushing off so much cash and it was taking so much of my time that we probably got, you know, a couple of years behind on the overall strategy of building out the training and development company. The job board continues to run and it's got its own staff and team and inside sales team that operates it. But it's not growing nearly as fast as the rest of the company is now.
Wow. So when you set off to do everything on your own, I mean, did it grow? Like, is this like kind of what you envisioned today? Did you feel like it was going to be something small? Did you feel like how's it now versus like when you started? Like how far along was it? Like where your vision was, especially, you know, coming out of a recession, coming where you're at. And you said you started this 2006, 2007.
Yeah, I started right the end of December 2006 started. So this will be year 11 for us. So, I mean, you could count, you know, January 1st, 2007 is our birthday. But our official day was December 12th, 2006 is when we started. And, you know, I guess there's a couple of things.
Yeah.
Is it where I envisioned it? To some extent, yeah. But, I, you know, it was hard to have that vision. Like, I couldn't see where we are today. I couldn't see the people. I couldn't see the situation or the setup. It's been really iterative to get here. And mm-hmm. early in the early days, man, I didn't sleep a lot. So, I mean, I was working all the time. So there are a couple of years I don't even really remember because of just how hard we were working. And we were always, you know, it took a couple of years to get profitable. And so we hit the black in the spring of 2009. We've never looked back and we've been cash flowed ever since then. Everything that we do is, you know, we've never borrowed a dime. We don't owe anybody any money. We have no investors and we've been able to invest going forward. That'll slow you down someplace sometimes when you're growing slow. But right now we're really in a hyper growth phase because we're literally doubling the size of the company every year.
Wow.
But what I can tell you is that early in 2007, I wanted to build a training and development company. I wanted to build an advisory and consulting company. I wanted to build a company that developed onboarding programs, work with companies on sales comp, that we were completely immersed in helping companies accelerate their top line. Mm-hmm. We've been really successful in that. A lot of our clients will, you know, double their growth over, you know, the course of, you know, 12 to 24 months. So we've been good at doing that. I just didn't know how it was going to look. But I've always been a bigger than me type of an entrepreneur. So there's a lot of people in my space mm-hmm. that are sales trained and they train. There are a lot of people in my space that are speakers and they speak. There are a lot of people in my space that are solo entrepreneurs. It's very fragmented that way.
Yeah.
That's not me. I realized, you know, I've known this from the very beginning. I'd say, you know, go back to the summer of, you know, 2008, 2009. I remember having a conversation with someone, you know, about the brand. So I've written 9 books. Most people know who I am that are in the sales world. Not everybody, but most people do. And I've got a pretty good personal brand. And even back as far as then, I remember sitting down with a napkin and saying, the company can't last if I'm the brand, mm-hmm. you know, and it will never scale if I'm the brand. So we made a decision to use the brand Sales Gravy. It's kind of a funky name, but people don't usually forget it.
Yeah.
And that, yes, I'm a big part of the brand, but how do we scale beyond that? Because for me personally, I like to build stuff and I want to build a bigger company. I want to make the people around me better. I want to enrich them and their families and their lives. And more than anything, I want to be able to have a company that can live on when I'm gone. And I've always had that vision, but to tell you that I had some like grand, I can point to the day where everything, you know, actualized the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
No, there was nothing like that. I mean, it's just been a series of a lot of mistakes and we just got lucky that some of the decisions that we made went really, really well.
That's awesome. So I kind of want to ask you in terms of from the CEO level and from the actual management level, what kind of common concerns or what kind of common problems they have? And then what about like the guys that are at the actual ground level? So again, if you're talking to a CEO, what is their biggest concern when it comes to their sales and marketing? And likewise, you know, for the sales rep now, what is their biggest challenge?
Well, if you talk to any CEO, I mean, when the CEO looks at their company, what they're looking at is two things: growth, like so the money that's coming in, and growth is king. At mm-hmm. least in this market right now, growth is king. So everybody wants to grow as fast as they can. Mm-hmm. Smart CEOs recognize that growing in absence of dropping it through the bottom line is not the smartest strategy in the world. And companies that are, you know, VC funded and all they're trying to get is users and they're trying to be the next Facebook aside, I'm a classical business person. I believe that if you bring in a dollar, some of that dollar needs to become profit. I'm not a fan of unprofitable growth for the sake of growth. So, but most CEOs, most good CEOs see it that way. They want to grow and they want to drop it to the bottom line.
Sure.
Their biggest headache on growth is it growing? And the second biggest headache is how much am I spending to make it grow? Because that takes out of the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So they're concerned about what's the return on my sales investment headcount. Or my sales headcount investment. We call it ROSHI, or ROSHI. But what's my return on that? And how quickly am I getting that return? So when you look at executives like CEOs and VPs, one of the ways that we help them unlock value in their organization is not by changing their infrastructure or changing their sales comp programs. And some of those things can make change. I mean, changing sales comp is really it's incremental. It doesn't, you'll never change sales comp. Say never, sometimes, but rarely will you change sales comp and get this massive influx of growth. Mm-hmm. But what we're able to do is we're able to both unlock growth and unlock profit by helping companies ramp up new salespeople faster. So if you're a company and you got 10 salespeople and they've been with you for 30 years, what I'm about to say has no impact on you whatsoever. You're not in that situation. Yeah. But most companies are hiring salespeople on a regular basis. They're bringing them in. They have, you know, turnover somewhere between 30 and say 90%, somewhere in that space.
Yeah.
And if we can lower turnover a little bit, that reduces the cost of hiring. And you can typically do that by investing in your people, doing a little bit better job of hiring people. We have a couple of assessments and processes that we use to help the organizations we work with hire better salespeople. But once we get them in, it's how do we align the new hire training and onboarding process. This is not HR onboarding process, sales onboarding process, to get those salespeople productive faster. So once we define what is ROI break even for that salesperson, so what number are they hitting on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and then we can back to when they start, we almost run a Six Sigma project against it. And then we look at the entire process and figure out how we're getting information to them, how are we getting them up, you know, onboarded, how are we sequencing that information and chunking it up in the right pieces, and how are we layering it on to make sure that it sticks. And we use a combination of online and offline programs to do that. We take the company's existing training material, we add what's missing, we do gap analysis on that. We mm-hmm. take a look at product knowledge training, the process of getting them in front of customers, and even the emotional and behavioral side of what do we need to do to get those salespeople in the rhythm of selling faster. And we've seen massive increases. One of my clients, when we first started working with them 4 years ago, 5 years ago, they were on about $600 million in revenue. It was taking them around 18 months to ramp up salespeople. We ran through the entire project, moved that to 90 days. They just hit $1.5 billion. So
90 numbers, days?
Yeah, wow. And we took from 18 months to 90 days. It was all about reconfiguring what we needed to do to get them ramped up. It's just a rethinking of the process. And it's not rocket science. The problem that most companies have is that they're so in the woods or in the weeds. Mm-hmm. And their learning and development folks, you know, they really feel like they've got this obligation to teach people everything. And a lot of it's helping our clients have faith that human beings learn way faster than they give them credit for, and that you don't have to give people all the information in order for them to perceive what to do. And if you give them the wrong information at the wrong time or the right information at the wrong time, it doesn't make a difference. You might not as well have taught them, and they run into other problems that bog them down later on. So it's accelerating that process. It's lubricating the process from start to finish. And these are, you know, they're big projects. they're fun. They're my favorite things in the world to do because it's like putting a part together. But you can only handle so many of those a year. And there's a lot of companies that aren't ready for it. I mean, they're really not ready emotionally for what it takes to accelerate a sales force. But when you do that, like when you start doing those type of things, it truly unlocks what's happening. Now, from you asked me about the salespeople on the ground, like the leaders and the salespeople, what are they focusing on?
Yeah.
You know, the big issue that are facing salespeople right now are pipeline. So it's going and getting new opportunities to put on the table so that they can sell. And if you look at sales leaders, the same thing's happening with them. Their biggest issue is how do I go find more prospects that I can put into the pipe to close more? It's prospecting and top of funnel. There are a lot of inside the funnel issues that are out there. Most companies focus on them. We've, you know, certainly we train people how to close more business, negotiate better, deal with objections, work through the sales process. You know, our program Sales EQ is all focused on that. But number one issue, like if we look at everything, number one issue is what are we doing to get stuff into the top of the funnel? And that's what's plaguing sales organizations everywhere are stalled, slowed, bogged down sales funnels or, you know, sales pipelines. And we spend, from a training standpoint, 80% of the training that we're doing in the field right now, 80% of the work that we're doing from both consulting and from selling is all focused on top of the funnel, how we get more stuff in.
Yeah. And you touch upon in your book, Fanatical Prospecting too, a lot of times a salesperson will make the mistake of forgetting, you know, depending on your industry, like 60 or 90 day rule, you know, as soon as you have enough things closed through, you get the commission check, cha-ching, you feel good about yourself. And then, you know, you don't actually see the results until a couple weeks later, you know, especially with some buyer cycles. Now it's becoming harder and harder to kind of move things quicker. So you don't necessarily see the actual effects of not actually building that actual pipeline back up. And especially as you said in your book too, you have some novice sales reps who are coming out and they see the veterans and they don't see that, you know, they were cultivating maybe that for years and it's just all like coming through and they know the accounts and they actually know their territories. One thing I want to ask, so what is the mix then? Like how many individual salespeople are motivated enough to kind of reach out to you and kind of do things on their own versus how much is it coming, you know, top down from corporate and saying, all right, well, this is what we're going to do and we're going to hire Jeb to do this. Like how much of that mix is there?
It's almost all corporate. I mean, we have, you know, we have an elite coaching program that's fully subscribed. And what that is I have coaches on my team. We have individuals. Usually these are independent salespeople. So they're not typically working for a big corporation. Mm-hmm. Typically they're working for, you know, they're an insurance agent. They've built their own company. They're an entrepreneur. They're people that have a vested interest in growing. So we pair those with our coaches. We have more coaching clients than we can get to, which is a good problem.
Sure.
So there's that's I'd say that, you know, but that's a very small group. When I say limited, you know, we can take about 10 people at one time and that's about it. And we can't take any more. Wow. So look at that in terms of the entire population. We're not talking about a whole lot of people. I mean, these are 90-day intensive programs and we're investing in people. So we have to give them the time that's involved. We run regular virtual classes, and what this means is they're live classes that we run in a virtual classroom with a live instructor. Mm-hmm. I'd say 30% of those are subscribed by individuals who come in and buy it themselves, and 70% is corporate. And then when you look at all the other training and the work that we do, I'd say we're in, you know, 99% range. It's companies that hire us, not individuals.
Gotcha. So what would, and you kind of touched upon some of those things, but if you kind of had to wrap it up, so what would you say separates, you know, sales gravy and separates your organization in terms of corporate, you know, trainers changing things from top down versus somebody else? Why would somebody come to you versus somebody else?
In my world, like when I look at the world of sales training, development, consulting, building things, integrating into our clients' businesses, licensing. The thing that sets us apart, and this is both a double-edged sword, is that we're real. The things that we teach, the things that we do are for real people, really in the field. Most of it's because of our DNA. I grew up in the trenches selling. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up teaching. and all of the people around me, and I don't let anybody on my team ever touch a salesperson. You never can stand in front of a group and train if you haven't been phenomenally successful at closing business and selling. So there's a lot of people out there in the world that train but have no idea how to sell. And I'm not hitting them, but salespeople can smell right through that. When mm-hmm. we're working with corporate executives, we're straightforward. We don't speak corporate speak. We don't speak consulting speak, and we're really, really bad at speaking learning and development speak. So all of the big words that people use, we just don't do that. We teach people how to sell, and we're really good at it. We help companies grow fast, and we're really good at it. But we're simple. We're straightforward. Sometimes I think it scares people how quickly we can move the bar with such simplicity. That's what sets us apart, but it's also a problem for us because people love complexity.
Absolutely. And
they love it when you come to them with a complex solution to a simple problem and there's big words involved in it and you've got all of the latest business buzzwords, and that's not who we are. It's not who we're ever going to be. And sometimes we get kicked out of deals that we should win. We get kicked out of opportunities where they really, really need us because there's an organization that really understands how to speak that language and they're much better at creating that feeling that this is the right thing to do, even though the backside of it is just simply stuff they take off the shelf that's generic that they throw at these companies and it usually doesn't work out. Good news is a lot of times we get pulled back into those deals later on. Mm-hmm. Bad news is sometimes they spend so much money getting connected to that particular company that they're stuck forever. And that's, you get beat that way. So, but that's what separates us. If, when I can look at any executive and say, you want to grow and you want to grow fast. I mean, you want to move, hire me. And that's what my team and I are going to do. We're going to move you really fast. And it's the place that we like to play, but we're lucky that, I sit here and say, we lose some deals. We're so busy right now that we're hiring as many people as we can. So it's okay that we're losing a few here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask then. So what is the biggest mistake right now that pretty much, companies are making right now? Is it trying to go into too many areas at once? Is it really, not focusing on the marketing? What's the biggest mistake companies are making right now in today's environment?
It's really simple. It's basics. There's so much tech out there and so many bright, shiny things mm-hmm. that companies are having a difficult time focusing their salespeople on the basics. They've got too many things that they're throwing at their salespeople, too much tech, too much complexity, and they're missing the fact that what they really, really need their salespeople to do is to close the deal. And to have a conversation with a salesperson or a customer and prospect and to advance the deal through the pipeline. Those are the big issues. People are making mistakes on tech, but they'll continue to make mistakes on tech and they'll learn really quickly from it because it's expensive.
Sure.
But the big issue is there's not a magic pill that's going to solve everything. And you really need to invest in your people. And if you invest in your people and you do that consistently, you're going to outgun and outperform pretty much every other organization out there.
Makes sense. So let me ask, so on the individual level then, how much resistance is there, especially when somebody's coming in as an outside trainer and saying, hey, we're going to revamp things, or hey, I'm going to help accelerate your sales, I'm going to accelerate your sales team, where maybe you had a sales manager, maybe you had, a chief marketing officer, maybe you had someone involved. Who kind of feels, hey, we've kind of done this always. So how do you deal with that? Or what kind of level of resistance have you seen when you are implementing something new? Because again, you talk about making things stick and chunking that, but how much initial resistance is there versus, as soon as you're committing, you're a couple months in?
There's always resistance. And I can appreciate it because I was in that place. I was a vice president of sales and we brought an outside company in to help us build some of our training out. And I know I didn't feel very good about it, even though I was part of bringing them in. When they came in and they're talking about things, I was, some of it just, I was like, well, I don't really connect to that. So I'm really, really sensitive to directors of sales and VPs of sales in particular who have a vested interest in the information and sometimes can see someone like me as making them look weak. Like, why would they need me if they couldn't do it? So it's there's a good news in all of this. We see ourselves as an extra set of hands. So when I'm with any sales leader, I'm like, I'm an extra set of hands. I can help you. And, you know, for example, we've got clients that I've got people on my team that are on their sales floors all the time working with them. And they've brought us in because not only are we an extra set of hands, but we're a different perspective. And there's symbiotic relationships that work. We get a lot of resistance in the learning and development groups because those groups employ trainers. So those people are training. And so I come in and teach. Some of those groups you just license the training to because once they license it, there's no resistance as long as they're training. Some of it's this fear that, you know, by bringing us in, they're going to be displaced. And I have been, I mean, in 11 years I've been doing this. I've not a single learning and development person in any company I've worked with has ever lost their job because we've been there. And in fact, in almost every situation when we are integrated into an organization and we're handling part of the training, they actually add L&D people because it gives L&D people the opportunity to do the things that they're really good at, which taking a look at the company specific issues and building courses and designing curriculum and letting us do the things that we're really good at, which is teaching people how to sell, because most L&D people haven't really done a lot of selling. Some of them have, but not a lot of them have done it as a career. They you know, they did it and then they moved into training because it was a better fit for what they were doing. And on the flip side, all of my people are, you know, stone cold killers when it comes to sales and they're good at it. So they have a lot of respect from the salespeople that they're teaching. So it's always going to be there with human beings. I mean, always human beings feel threatened. That is our natural go-to. We're risk averse. We look for threats, and it's really incumbent on us to manage those emotions as we go through the process. And when there's a lot of resistance, when there's a huge amount of resistance, you're not going to get to the company in the first place. The people that are in the organization are going to figure out a way to kill the, you know, the conversation way early. So, and we test for that, and we're sensitive to it. And it doesn't do anybody any good to, you know, to spend money on us if their organization isn't going to adopt the things that we're teaching them, nor does it do us any good because we enjoy what we do to spend time with people that don't want us there.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the flip side then. So what would you say in terms of, you know, either a product or a service or maybe a company who you actually consulted with? What are you most proud of at this point, especially coming in 11 years? And I mean, I so you have 10 million, you said 10 million downloads of the actual podcast?
Podcast, yep.
I think I might have been like number 10. So
that's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, what would you say you're actually most proud of in terms of what you've built or in terms of maybe companies who you've actually helped out?
I'm most proud of, you know, I can just get, you know, one after another, the $4 million software company, you know, out in Colorado that we turned into an $8 million software company, the $50 million capital equipment company that today is knocking on the door, $250 million. You know, I'm proud of our ability to work with our clients and then watch them grow. And let's be clear, when these companies are growing at that rate, we're a part of it. We're a piece of it. We're not the whole thing. We certainly can't take credit for it, but we know that we were part of the team. And I'm really proud of that. I'm proud when companies, this is my favorite thing. We call them integrated partners. And, you know, we have four different types of customers that we work with. And the one that we treasure the most are our integrated partners. And these are companies that trust us at a level that we are no longer in dealing with contracts and negotiation and what are you going to do? And, you know, and it's transactional. It's the phone lines are open. They're talking to us all the time. We're part of their team. And it transcends money and business and all those other things. They see us as a sustainable resource for their organization that they want and need to have around. And we're so grateful for those relationships because that's what we want. I mean, and I can speak for all my people, we do this because we love it. And when a company says, we want you to come and be a part of our sales organization and play a critical role and make an impact and work with our people, that's what I'm most proud of. And we're the more of those relationships we build, the happier that I get. And they won't all be that way, but those are the fun ones.
Awesome. Awesome. So let me ask then, so in terms of a recommendation for our listeners, could be a book or could be a resource or an app or a course, obviously excluding your own, What would you recommend our listeners to actually reach out to? Maybe something that they're currently not doing now that's going to help them in their career, that's going to help them in terms of their actual development as an actual salesperson.
Yeah, you know, there's a book that I really dig right now. It's my buddy Anthony Areno. Is called The Lost Art of Closing, and I've read it twice now, and I'm in the middle of writing a new book called Objections, and I've been using it as a resource for some of the chapters I've been writing, and I would highly recommend that book. I think it's a fantastic book, and Anthony's got a podcast also called In the Arena.
That's in the Arena. Yeah, we had Anthony on shortly after he wrote The Only Sales Guide you'll Ever Need. Yeah. And it was funny because I kind of put him on the spot there because I'm like, you know, you have some of the elements, whatever, but what are the other four? He's like, I have to save that for another book. So right. Is that actually in? Is that in The Lost Art of Closing, the other parts of the sales periodic table?
Yeah, I think some of them are in there. I always give him a hard time. I'm like, it's the only sales guide you ever need, except for my books. I mean, so.
Obviously. Well, very cool, very cool. So let me go ahead and one, I really appreciate you weighing in on this. And for me, it actually comes in for, you know, for me as a wrestler, is you talk about like leaving a voicemail versus not leaving a voicemail. I think you use the Wayne Gretzky, quote, you know, you're going to miss 100% of the shots you never take. I like to think Dan Gable actually set up that quote as a wrestler. But in terms of like maybe objection handling or again, on the actual individual, what is like tactically the area where you feel like a lot of sales reps are actually messing up? Is it actually closing, overcoming objections, or the, hey, I'm satisfied? What tactically are salespeople like can they actually work on? Like, again, in terms of focusing on so many different things, if they can make one change, what should they work on the most?
Listen, once you've gotten the prospect in the door, mm-hmm. Number one problem salespeople have, number one, is they skip the most important step in the sales process, and that is discovery, mm-hmm. and which is 80% of the sales process, which is where most deals are going to be closed, even though you're not getting an explicit closing, you know, moment in that with that, you know, in discovery. But I'd say it's number one. I mean, even my salespeople, we had a conversation 2 weeks ago. We sat down and looked at a couple of deals we lost, and we went through them, and the answer was really – I mean, it was just in our faces. We didn't listen. We weren't listening. We were talking. And that happens, you know, in our world, it happens sometimes when you've got so many leads coming in and so many opportunities, you get sloppy and mm-hmm. you get maybe a little arrogant and you start moving too fast. And it happens to salespeople because they don't like to listen for a lot of reasons. So yeah, number one, tactically, shut up. And ask good questions and listen. You do that, you'll be better off.
That's awesome. And I think Tom Hopkins actually had that exact same advice. And most people who you've actually had on the podcast have obviously said the same thing. So obviously hearing it from Jeb, hearing it from Tom Hopkins, hearing it from Anthony, obviously no, you're definitely getting sound advice. So in terms of moving forward for the actual future, again, people talk about, you know, buyers are busier now, or, you know, even more people are actually involved in the actual like process itself. What do you see is going to be the biggest change, or what is going to be the biggest trend moving forward now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, for someone who might be just getting into sales versus someone who's kind of done it forever? What do you see down the pike?
I don't see big trends. I don't see a big change. Okay. I think that the noise has changed. You hear noise. Mm-hmm. But the noise is all surface. The noise is all people trying to get your attention. I think that if you're coming into sales right now, what you're going to find is that we spent, you know, the last, gosh, well, let's look back. The late 90s to the early part of the first half of this century. So, you know, 2005, 2006. We were focused on process. So the entire pendulum shifted into process. The pendulum started shifting back in 2003, 2004, 2005, when people were looking at, you know, sell to the human side of selling. And you could see that in conferences. You could see that with speakers. You could see that with books.
Mm-hmm.
From 2006 until around now, this trend will continue. We've been focused on data is probably one, but more anything, you know, tech. There's all this tech that'll do all these things for you. And if we look at the numbers, the raw numbers, I was just out in the Bay Area with some really smart people going through it. Productivity is not increasing. And in fact, it is decreasing. So mm-hmm. all of this stuff supposed to be moving productivity. So from process to productivity, all this crap is not moving productivity, not one iota. It's not making anybody any better. Now, it should be making things easier. That's different than productivity. So what we should be seeing, and what I expect to see, is that there's going to be a renaissance of human skills. How are human beings dealing with each other? Because we only have two paths we're going to go down. Machines are going to take over and run everything. And if machines take over, they don't need us anymore. And if you don't need us anymore, there aren't going to be any more humans. So you can just go down, you know, and take a look at all the AI horror stories. And there's, you know, there's going to be a singularity, and, you know, robots are going to wipe us off the face of the earth. And it's one path, right? The other path is that there's going to be a striation of human beings who are brilliant at integrating tech into their lives. And I believe tech integration is really what you're going to see. They integrate tech into their lives that gives them more time to spend with people. I believe that it's not a trend. I believe it is the truth that the salespeople now and into the future, who will continue to dominate our profession and continue to make the most money, have learned how to deal with other human beings more effectively than the next person. And I wrote about this in my book, Sales EQ, and I'll continue to, you know, prophesize this. So I think that's the case. And I think that we have to look at, and this is sort of an ugly, dirty way of looking at it, but three striations of human beings, and just take the next 20 years, and you're going to see this sort of work itself out. There's a group of people who have learned how to integrate tech, and they're brilliant with human beings. They're smart. They have high IQs. They've invested in themselves. They read books. They build their knowledge base, and they invest in and learn and build their emotional intelligence. And those, that group of people is going to rule the world. They're going to be the highest earning people. They're going to separate themselves from everyone else. There's going to be problems with it because they're going to make the most money, and it's going to create income equality because these people are going to make the most money of everybody everywhere. And salespeople are going to be on that train because sales is a human business. There's a group in the middle that are going to be they're going to be stuck. They're going to be great at tech, but that's all they got. Tech dominates everything that they do. They can't think beyond tech, get beyond tech. Their productivity is stifled, and they tech gets in the way of their ability to deal with people. And that's just the middle group. They're going to live a life that is sort of, you know, it's stagnant. And then there's going to be a group of people at the bottom, and they're going to be failures. Because they can neither integrate tech nor deal with people. And if they can't deal with people, they can't integrate tech to give them enough time to deal with people. And that group of people is going to fail. So when we look at tech for sales in particular and the things that it's doing that hold sales organizations back, the flip side of that, this is the part we have to start thinking differently about, is that we don't teach people how to integrate the tech, then you're going to fail. And in my company, if you work for my company and you come to me and tell me that you don't know how to use a computer, or you're having a hard time with the computer, or you don't really understand tech, or this is tough for you, I'll just write you your last check and see you on your way. Because if you can't integrate tech into your life, you can't work for me. We have to be able to do that. So when we look at the big trends in the world, this is impacting every industry, every human being, everywhere. We're all in this situation. But for salespeople in particular, if you're getting into sales right now or you are in sales, focus your time and attention on being with human beings. Focus your time and attention on learning how human beings operate, because the human brain is the same human brain it was 10,000 years ago. It is not changing. It is not evolving at that rate. Yep, we are rewiring a few things with the way we deal with tech, but the way we operate instinctually and the way our brains work, they're the same. And the science teaches us how to work the brain. Figure that out. Use tech to give yourself more time to do that. And if tech is taking time away from you, and I'm just that way, get rid of it. And I'll give you leave you one last thing on that. But I was in a radio interview.
Yeah.
App was for time management. I said a pen and a sticky note. And he was like, stop. He's like, that's not an app. I go, yeah, it sure is an app. Because I got all these things. Like I got apps that, you know, run my task list, tell me what to do, all those other things. So what I found is if I write the three things that have to happen every single day on a sticky note before I go to bed, and I stick it on the mirror where I'm going to be getting dressed the next morning, those three things happen. If I put it in my phone, it disappears and everything else that I've got going on. So tech isn't always the answer, right? It's the way that you get stuff done that's the answer. So if tech is not making you more productive, get rid of it and deal with the things that are making you more productive.
Absolutely. And one thing I like too is, again, how many times you said the word integrate, because, and one thing that I like about your books and about your courses in particular is that there's so many people out there now that are saying like, all right, well, you know, we can all do this only on social media, and social media is actually going to, we're going to automate this. You talk about sales automation, you talk about all those other things. And I mean, if you look at some of these tech companies too, that's the one job that's pretty much always going to be there. Like Facebook is still hiring salespeople. Google is still hiring people to actually to sell ad space. Like sales, if you know how to sell and you know how to deal with people and you learn that actual skill, you will always have an actual career. You'll always have an opportunity. Again, I like how you put that. You're going to have to integrate that. So if, you know, obviously if I'm, you know, download number 10 million and one, and I'm just hearing you for the first time, or if I'm just reaching out, how can people find you, Jeb? If someone wants to reach out, someone wants to hire you, someone wants to just get some more information, or someone wants to, you know, take some of your courses, how can they find you?
Absolutely. So if you want to find me, come to salesgravy.com. That's the easiest, fastest way. Or you can go to my website, jebblunt.com. Now, my last name is spelled B-L-O-U-N-T, pronounced Blount in some places in the country, Blunt mm-hmm. in other places. I pronounce it Blunt, but jebblunt.com. So either of those places you can go. On Twitter, I'm at salesgravy. By the way, for all the Yankees out there, there's no E in gravy. It's just G-R-A-V-Y. So salesgravy. on Instagram, I'm at salesgravy. On Facebook, I'm at salesgravy. You can find me on LinkedIn, which is my go-to site. You'll find me probably more on LinkedIn than anywhere else. And then you can download my podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or anywhere else. Just type in salesgravy or my name, Jeb Blunt, B-L-O-U-N-T. And also check out my YouTube channel. I don't post a new video every single day, but almost every single day I post a new video, and you can grab that on YouTube. And if you want to give us a call, I'm at 844-447-3737, 844-447-3737. And my email address is Jeb, J-E-B, at salesgravy.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And what we're going to do is we're going to have links to all this in the actual show notes. All right. So Jeb, obviously our format, we try to keep things short and simple. Any kind of final parting words of wisdom for our listeners?
My final thought would be, you know, in the new year, think about how you can maximize and optimize the interactions you have with other human beings. I just think if you take 2018, this next year, and really put your focus on that, that you're going to see a massive impact and change in your life.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, super excited to have you on the actual show. Again, I'm pretty sure I was listener number 10. So again, really excited to have you on now.
Thank you.
But yeah, man, have a good one. And, I'm sure we're going to be in touch soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That wraps things up for this episode, and wanted to remind you guys that you can always find show notes at pushpullsales.com. You can also connect with us on social media. We are at pushpullsales on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can reach out to us anytime if you have feedback or topic suggestions or want to be a guest on the show. You can simply email us pushpullsales@gmail.com. You can also support our show at patreon.com/pushpullsales. Thank you to bensound.com for our intro and outro music. And thanks to you guys for listening. Tune in next time where we'll tackle another topic. See ya.